Episode 306 of the Roguecast, recorded September 22nd, 2020. Snowy Owlbear is best boy. Gentlemen, it's cold, and I don't like it.
I salute the cold, for it is better than hot.
You know what's funny is that you mean that in a different way than I mean it. What you mean to say is that it has dropped out of scalding 90-degree-plus temperatures and 100-degree-plus temperatures to, like, 70s and 80s.
That is correct.
But as we record this in the office, I am physically cold indoors, which is where I get cold.
Yep.
Because the AC concentrates in this small room in the time, and I'm very chilly.
Also, it reminds me that it's cold and rainy outside, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I know you're not big on the rainy weather. Alas, for me, it is the harbinger of great times and Halloween and fall and things like that.
Yep.
As I call it, pandemic season, cold edition.
I call it pandemic season, moist edition.
Oh, God.
I'll tell you how into it I am. The last 2 days, I went out for a walk after work at dusk as it was raining.
Yep.
Just so I could walk in the rain, which was not actually true rain, but kind of like mist and light sprinkles.
Walking in the rain is like a Bruce Banner kind of thing. Did you have your thumb out? Was there sad music playing?
I felt internally sad.
He had sad music playing on his phone while he...
I was actually listening to, at one point, to the podcast that you had recommended, Reply All episode on QAnon, which was quite good. And I am sneaking in a recommendation to it, even though we're not doing the topics, maybe, in this podcast.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of TV, which I don't think we're going to have time to talk about this time, maybe next time. I also watched a couple horror movies. I got my Shudder trial subscription going. So
if we do manage to sneak in topics, obviously there's one that I need to talk about.
Yeah. It is September.
Yeah.
So, but we started late today, and so we probably will not get to topics this week. We'll probably talk about horror movies.
We'll see how fast we talk. Yeah.
We'll see. Store news, just related, there's Marvel Splendor came out, which I am super excited about. It is one of my favorite games, and basically it was in the original game you were like gem merchants, you're collecting gems and you're buying mines and all that kind of stuff to...
But there are no gem merchants in Marvel.
To get the favor of nobles.
Uh-huh.
And in Splendor, the gem merchants and mines and that kind of thing are represented as characters. You're recruiting characters for your army.
Uh-huh.
The gems themselves are, of course, the Infinity Gems.
Uh-huh.
And the nobles that you get for points are locations. You secure locations, and then you win the game by getting the Infinity Gauntlet.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I see that Lockjaw's one of the heroes.
Lockjaw's one of the heroes,
and it's amazing.
Lockjaw's not a hero, he's a sidekick.
No, Lockjaw's a hero.
Why would you put him in
the
corner?
All doggos are heroes.
Why would you do that?
Go fetch something, Lockjaw.
He's going to teleport you to hell.
all dogs go to heaven, except for Lockjaw, who goes to the moon.
Lockjaw was only a true hero in the when John Byrne retconned him into being a human.
No, that story's terrible. And I'm glad Peter David undid it in the most disrespectful way possible.
It truly was.
Other than that, I don't think there was a ton of games. We already talked last week about the Rime of the Frostmaiden book.
Yep.
Although, I don't know if at the time...
Have we talked about Chonky Owlbear?
I was going to say, I don't know if we know about Chonky Owlbear. If we did, you're going to hear about Chonky Owlbear again. So there is a mini in the new Rime of the Frostmaiden set.
All icy-themed and, like, kind of cool yetis and stuff like that. And people in art, you know, like, furs and art and like, arctic armor
and
stuff.
Cool. There's little goblin-y guys with snowballs.
But there's an immediate champ, though.
That is the Chonky Owlbear.
Yes, he's like a snowy owlbear, like a snow owl, I guess, combined with like a polar bear
thing. He's like flopped down his butt with his paws in front of
him. Yeah, he does not look all fierce and foreboding. Sometimes owlbears are shown to be pretty foreboding. This is one of those ones where it's like they embrace the cuteness of them.
Yeah.
It's like he's a little tubby, and he fell back on his bottom.
Yep. And I'm not sure everybody knows, but the owlbear is sort of the unofficial D&D mascot of this store.
Yep. Soon to have something more of a presence, maybe, in the store.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
In a way that'll come up later on.
Yes, because Randy's done something crazy.
Yeah.
No, I am unaware of this.
This yet.
I'll tell you, it's kind of funny.
I'm assuming it's Dave in an owlbear costume.
I mean, I've got one. Stitched together from my enemies.
Dave's gonna be outside in an owlbear costume spinning a sign that says comics and games.
So this miniature, one of our longtime favorite customers and friends picked him up.
Yep.
We took a picture, posted on the Facebooks. It kind of made his way around, and now all of our friends are looking for.
Yep, everybody wants the owlbear.
Chunky owlbear.
He's an uncommon.
He's
so
thick.
It seems pretty likely you can get one if you pick up some minis.
Yep.
In fact, our ex employee Kate.
Yeah.
Picked up a few. She got one in her, like, third pack, and it was like she had discovered fire.
Yeah.
She was so happy.
Shibatsu was very sad that neither contained what she wanted, and they were going to leave, but she was like, there's three left, I have to pick one.
When Kate is sad, she's very sad.
Yep.
Kate is happy, she's ecstatically joyous.
And when Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Thank you for the t-shirt out of a gift store.
When Snowy Owlbear ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Snowy Owlbear is best boy.
I think that is probably all the game stuff that I can think of. Oh,
sure.
There's new Arkham Horror. If you are playing Arkham Horror, there's a new expansion for that as well. All right, so let's talk news. And specifically, the big one, I think, is the WandaVision trailer that dropped.
Yep.
This was the first trailer, right?
They kind of teaser trailer that teased all of them, literally just like a few snippets of scenes.
I do remember glimpses of this with it showing its kind of, you know, using the iconography of like 50s and 60s sitcoms and kind of the old, kind of that. Better Homes and Gardens that's like right out of, what do you call it? Feed Me Seymour?
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors, the song she sings.
That's green? No.
Something like that. Yeah. But anyway, it's the song his girlfriend sings about being wistful for that sort of Better Homes and Gardens look.
And then they're all eaten by a giant carnivorous plant.
That is what the strange twist the movie takes, and I suspect WandaVision will also take its own strange twists and turns.
The plant takes that taste, that too. She feeds it, like, she feeds Seymour and herself to the plant, I think, at the end.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, the play of Little House.
I was juxtaposing it against WandaVision, not other versions of it.
There's going to be a giant plant that eats them at the end.
I don't think so.
No. If the X-Men were involved, yes.
Yes,
since they're not, I don't think there's going to be a carnivorous plant.
You don't think Plant Man is going to make his big MCU debut?
No.
This-ish Plant Man. This looks good. So, first of all, Catherine Hahn's in it. I love her.
Who's that?
She's going to be playing the nosy neighbor, but obviously
she's dressed as a witch in a witch costume for Halloween. I'm like, is she either nod to Agatha or one
Agatha
of those?
Harkness.
Yeah, Agatha Harkness.
That was like, I don't know where she comes from, but she was like the witchy governess, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah.
Of her.
She came from Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's who it's going to be or if it's.
I think her name is something else. So.
Yeah. But it's great to have Catherine Hahn in there. I do want to talk about budget. This looks on par with, like, the movies.
I don't know. The costumes look kind of cheap.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, it's like...
Yes.
I did love that. I did love that we see Vision in, like, what looks like a Halloween version of the comic costume.
And
Wanda in... It's so good.
I like it. I find it, like, just on the verge of being a comic books are silly.
That's fair.
Well, it's a little bit like...
But I'm going to say just on the verge.
I feel like it's a little bit what they did with Captain America in the first Avenger.
Yeah, I thought about it the same way, too. Like, the Marvel movies overall do a good job, but I also think, had they chosen to go a little bit more colorful, they also could have.
Well, we can't all be the DC Universe in a sepia tone.
So what this looks like is... Well, it's interesting you mentioned the budget, though, Nick, because it also looks like a domestic sitcom thing. Like,
yeah, but there are shots that, like, with Vision swooping out and you get kind of a wider view of the neighborhood, it just looks like the FX budget is going to be a little, like, but more on par.
And doing a 50s period is not cheap either.
No.
Like, they clearly built sets and everything.
Yeah, it has a very I Love Lucy kind of feel.
Right. But not, like, it seems clear that some scenes will have that, but not all scenes.
Well, I think...
Like, that is, I don't know quite what that represents.
Dave, I think you and I, our fear on this was that they were going to go sort of too Tom King-y.
Right, Tom King, like, who did the kind of creepy domestic life version... In his miniseries.
Yeah. And I don't think it's that.
I think it's going to have elements of that.
But this looks more like it is a love story between Wanda and Vision, which is what I want. I'm wondering, since they show her using her powers a few times, I'm wondering if basically she does something to bring him back to life. And that's what all of this is basically her hallucination.
Is he currently dead?
Yeah, he was killed at the end of Infinity War.
Thanos destroyed him. Like, ripped the gem out of his head. And he does have the gem here, so honestly...
I couldn't remember if that got, like, undone.
It specifically didn't.
Okay.
Well, he blew up, and then Thanos rewound, ripped the gem out of his head, and then he...
So we actually don't know the baseline premise of this movie, of this show?
Nope, and I like it that way.
Other than the fact that I think it's Wanda going crazy and altering reality in such a way that she's, like, picking things, like, the multiverse apart. Because I know she has some thing.
Like maybe she watched like I Love Lucy type stuff growing up, and so that's like she her mind spins that into some little weird reality.
And I know she's gonna fit into the next Doctor Strange too. So
You know what'd be interesting is if she was. Well, you said next Doctor Strange, and that was the one that's supposed to be the multiverse thing.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting, if she was, like, creating these little micro-realities just to kind of keep herself sane or whatever, and then, like, one of them, she's like, oh, he's actually alive in this one, or something like that.
I would imagine it starts with her dealing with loss, because she lost the person she loves.
And it was no small loss, as her anger and near destruction of Thanos indicated, she was ready to just explode everything.
By the way, one thing, and I know that there's always differences in how Disney markets thing, but one thing that came to mind is that when they did Infinity War and when they did Endgame, they teased us with, like, they didn't show us most of the movie.
Right.
They put together a story, like, they put together a trailer for Endgame. It looked like it was Endgame's trailer, but it was really the first, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Right, and like, hypothetically, all this stuff that we're seeing actually might not even be the main of it.
I'm saying, looking at what they showed us, I bet that's the pilot. I bet they have not showed us anything about what the show's actually going to be.
And it's 6 episodes, right?
I have no idea.
I think I have heard most, or all of the Marvel ones are going to be 6
episodes.
Are they
our ones?
Yeah.
So it's basically, like, 3 movies, a little trilogy.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I do think it was, I did really like the trailer, It's you know, it's sort of spoofing a 50s mentality where, like, or like those kind of tropes where somebody is like, oh, I see you just moved in. When are you having a baby? And they're kind of doing the nosy neighbor stuff.
And then it gets weird and dark.
It reminds me in some ways of just kind of like very, very loosely of like, was it Legion and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Where you had this kind of trippy hallucinatory quality, but there was definitely like more darkness probably in that.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
I'm happy we're getting 6 hours of Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany being able to sort of stretch their legs as these characters.
Yeah,
because
that's cool.
The scenes that they do have in Infinity War.
Good chemistry.
They had great chemistry together.
Well, honestly, just
and that's not easy to do. Like, I've seen so many superhero movies recently where that they didn't do it.
They built up their relationship across like 3 movies. Really impressive. Like, she shows up. They both show up in Age of Ultron. And there's a little nod where he rescues her.
Yep.
And it was like, oh, they're going to do this. And the only reason anybody would know it is because you knew it from the comics. And then in Civil War, they were like becoming friends. And you could tell that there was a little spark there. And then we jump to Infinity War and they're together.
Doesn't he try to create her favorite dish?
Yeah. It's a really good way of telling the story by shortcut. It's the kind of the MCU does so well.
Yep.
But like you say,
but 3 movies does give it time to breathe.
Yeah.
Like, it's not too hurried.
But this we get to see, like, full-on
character.
We'll
really get to see them develop the relationship in a way we haven't before.
I remain not... I guess I wouldn't say skeptical, but I'm not going to be excited until I see it, because, the MCU has been such a specific thing, which is, like, the film format.
Yeah.
And so seeing it as a TV series, well, I strongly suspect they can pull it off.
Yeah.
I kind of need to see at least one example of it first, because every other example for like the last 10, 15 years has been some degree of disappointing.
Except for Legion, which is great.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll see Quicksilver show back up, since she can kind of create realities
Maybe.
And stuff.
I mean, that guy's not super, super busy.
No.
He's
a good actor.
So, I'm pretty much a believer when it comes to Marvel. I am not the optimist in general, but when it comes to Marvel, I have a lot of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 2 other bits of Marvel news that gives me a little more hope. So, they cast their She-Hulk for their Disney Plus show.
Yeah, people seem happy with this.
They've cast Tatiana Maslany, who is phenomenal.
Yes.
She was an Orphan Black playing basically 4 different versions of the same character, like clones.
Oh, she was that lead. Okay.
Yeah, she's the
okay.
Lead.
She has major chops. And then she was also in Parks and Rec briefly as like one of the girlfriends, and she was great in that little role. She is definitely the actress who can pull off, if they're going to do different personalities for She-Hulk at all, she can do that. The thing I'm curious about is the look. Like, I don't think it was particularly tall or anything like that.
No.
So.
Is she only going to play Jen Walters? Will she play Jen Walters with CG modification when she's She-Hulk? Will she get swole? Will she, you know, like...
I bet they do the CG route, because that worked out for
Mark Ruffalo,
so...
I feel like that's going to be...
Is this the same format as the other ones? Like, is this WandaVision and all that?
Yeah,
like,
it's a TV show.
And then she's going to
be... So they could put some decent money into it.
Well, I think all of these... are going to be like have repercussions to the main movies, and those characters are going to be brought into their own, like having their own things.
Well,
and stuff like
that's
that.
A lot of CG, though.
CG
6 episodes or something.
CG isn't expensive as it used to be.
I know, but if you if it's your lead character,
yeah.
I mean, like, traditionally, and I know they probably won't do this exactly, but traditionally She-Hulk is She-Hulk all the time.
She won't be She-Hulk all the time. Yeah. I'm sure she will be Jen Walters, and because that's what she's doing
They
now.
Could actually almost end with the notion, because you could probably do this on a movie budget, if at the end she's like, you know what, I don't actually need to be a human, I'm happier this way.
Yeah.
If that was, like, the finale,
yeah.
that would set up the movies to take it from there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited about this. That was not someone that was on my radar as who they were going to cast. It's
everyone was talking about Alison Brie.
Yeah.
Which...
Also weird.
It would have been a weird one, but I like her a lot.
Oh, and she's great in Glow.
She's great in Glow, so...
But yeah, somebody, if they do have her, like, yeah, like, at least initially, you know, usually She-Hulk and Jennifer Walters have essentially the same personality.
Yeah.
She's maybe a little more freewheeling and outgoing as She-Hulk, but... But it is an opportunity for an actress who likes to play, you know, multiple characters within a show to really try that out.
And I assume Mark Ruffalo will show up. I mean,
I think so.
I think he's outright said that he's involved.
I think he has. I think he said he's going to be involved. And then the last one, I didn't realize this was far enough in development, but Ms. Marvel at Disney Plus, Kamala Khan, has directors now. It's going to be, at least the pilot is going to be directed by the Bad Boys for Life directors.
Yeah.
Which
I think this is a good call. The Bad Boys for Life was actually a lot of fun.
Never seen it.
I like the Bad Boys franchise. Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are great, but this one was not. They directed this. Michael Bay was somewhat involved, I think, because it is sort of his franchise. Mm. But he was able to sort of pull off a Michael Bay style, but their own style as well. So
they also added a couple of the directors. I'm not going to pronounce any of these names because I don't know it, but there are directors who have worked, someone who won 2 Oscars for Best Documentary Short Subject, someone who worked on The Punisher, Walking Dead, and Titans. So they've got some directors lined up. I don't know when this is going to happen.
I thought they were shooting for next year.
But yeah, it says, so maybe that next year is going to be Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk.
Well, and also Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yep. Well, and Jonathan Majors cast as Kang and Ant-Man.
Yeah.
So they're still moving forward, even though they've been slowed by the virus and, like, we haven't even seen Black Widow. They're still planning for this, so that's good.
They're still shooting and filming everything. However, the release thing is because movie theaters aren't open,
yeah,
and it doesn't look like they're going to be opening anytime soon.
Yeah. Oh, they're open.
They're open, but people aren't going.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, Tenet is finding that out. And that people aren't...
The last couple bits of TV news. One is that Harley Quinn season 3 has been renewed and moved to officially to HBO Max.
Yep.
So DC did fully announce they're going to kill the DC app for TV.
Yeah.
But they're going to convert it over to a Marvel Unlimited, basically.
Yep.
Which is what it should have been in the first place. Just make it a comics app.
I'm happy that all the shows are going to go on HBO.
Yeah, me too.
People seem to have been, everybody I noticed who's mentioning the Harley Quinn show lately is mentioning it generally ecstatically.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
And so, yeah, I think that's going to continue
Did
to grow its audience.
Did you finish watching the
I don't
show?
Watch humorous shows.
Dave's only seen, like, 3 episodes of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
It's actually, like, 2.
That's like 3.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah. And then over...
It's good. It's just not my thing.
Another streaming channel. The streaming stuff is going to be shaking out. And I think that got sped up by pandemic as well, because
yeah.
A lot of people were doing streaming TV. But I guess CBS All Access in 2021 is going to be reconverted into Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
So it's going to have all the CBS All Access stuff, but it is also going to have some new original stuff.
And it's going to have access to the Paramount movie
yeah.
library as
so,
well.
Hopefully it won't be a huge bump of in price.
Yeah.
Because already I'm like, I don't want to pay this much just for Star Trek.
Well, at the very least, we'll be getting
The Stand
out of it, the Stand miniseries. I've had friends telling me that the Twilight Zone series, they think, took a huge leap forward in the second season.
There's only really one way for it to go.
You know, there was stuff in there that was good. That was the thing. It wasn't, like, all awful, but it did seem like the overall vibe was off.
Man, I don't know. I watched, at one point I binged, like, 6 or 7 episodes trying to see if it ever got better. And I mostly felt like it was just dreary.
In some ways I agree with you there, but, like, wouldn't you say the acting was high caliber?
The cast was high caliber.
I think the acting was really good.
I don't know, man. There's nothing I can remember about any of it.
You know, I thought that what's-his-name, who was the guy from 30 Rock who was the devil comedian in the first episode type person?
I don't remember.
Who's the guy from
30 Rock? Kumail Nanjiani is the guy.
The stand-up comic?
Yeah. Nope, the guy... But not him. The guy who played the devil-y person who was...
The devil-y person? See, I don't remember any of this.
At least I think from 30 Rock. Who's the black guy on 30 Rock?
Oh, Tracy Morgan.
Yeah,
right. Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, he was all right. You're right.
Yeah, like, oh, their interactions and the stuff with him, like Kumail Nanjiani and his girlfriend and stuff, I thought was all good. I felt like the acting was high caliber in it. Hmm. And I think even the writing, incidentally, was high caliber. I think the plotting and stuff like that was kind of where the weaknesses were for me.
It should never have been an hour long.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weird thing is it's variable. It's somewhere 45 minutes, but, like, somewhere as... I've heard some of the second season episodes are as short as, like, 35.
Hmm.
So, anyway... Yeah. CBS All Access, I don't really want it to go up in price.
Yeah, me neither.
It does also have Evil, which is actually my favorite show that I saw last year.
But really Evil good. Just got put on Netflix.
That's good. I will... Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, Evil, that means I need to promote that to my peeps.
Evil and, Unicorn?
Oh, the Unicorn. Okay.
Got put on. So some of CBS is weirdly coming up on Netflix.
But The Good Fight is a CBS All Access original. I don't know if it's going to be going to Netflix, and it's great.
Isn't Star Trek Discovery going to show on, like, regular CBS?
I think next week it airs, the first season airs.
And then it'll go to Netflix after that, probably.
Probably, because I know it goes into Netflix Canada. Okay. I know they get it, like...
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that'll draw people to it, because it is a good and worthy show.
I will say CBS All Access does have a lot of upcoming shows. I don't recognize a lot of them, but...
Yeah, I looked at the lineup. Nothing was like, oh, wow, I'm excited for that.
But, I mean, there's some, like, The Man Who Fell to Earth and stuff like that. Some good, interesting-sounding sci-fi, and...
We'll see. There's too many streaming networks.
That's for sure.
We need a few of them to merge. Into one giant streaming network.
Yeah, mega corporations. That's the way to go.
$10 a month.
Let's just get the Blade... Let's just do the Blade Runner future right now.
So all our videos we played on the chest of evil robots.
I am ready for a sci-fi movie style EMP pulse that knocks out everything, and it's just books. That's it. That's what we got.
All right. Speaking of books, Brian Stelfreeze has a new creator-owned book coming out called Thomas River. That's about a super spy.
Yep.
That sounds cool. It's always good to see Brian Stelfreeze in comics.
I know.
For those who don't know, Brian Stelfreeze is a talented artist, but who was kind of like most at his biggest, what, in the 90s?
Yeah. Well, he did Black Panther with Ta-Nehisi Coates. That was his big
more
recent
recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Does he kind of do more painty stuff sometimes?
He does.
He used to do a lot of covers, and his covers were always really beautiful.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen him before, I recommend anybody Googling his stuff and checking it out.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to this. Sounds like a fun premise.
Yep. I was looking to see what else is like.
Randy, is he by chance involved in like the new Milestone stuff at all?
No,
That's too bad. He'd be a get.
Yep, he would. I guess he's doing it. It's a John Wick meets James Bond is the pitch, and I guess he's doing it on Kickstarter. So,
okay.
And then last bit of comic news and last bit of news for the week, they're doing a new MODOK miniseries by Patton Oswalt.
You mean the mental organism designed only for killing?
Apparently designed only for comedy.
That is true. So for the handful out there who don't know, MODOK is the weird big head kind of villain and built into like a robotic chair.
Yep.
That's like from old Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D. comics and stuff like
he's
that.
He's an Iron Man villain originally.
I think you're right.
He's an AIM creation.
Yeah. He is sometimes the head of AIM. Sometimes just more of like a killing machine for them. And in the last 10-15 years, most often a subject of comedy because he is a big floating head.
Yeah.
And so finally, I guess they were like, well, it's not like they haven't run with that before, but bringing in Patton Oswalt is pretty notable.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt himself is a big floating head.
I will say this. Patton Oswalt is someone who loves comics.
Yeah.
So I feel like he'll treat it with respect even if he does do goofy stuff.
I mean, I think it's... I wouldn't necessarily expect that because I think he's going to be goofing on it.
Yeah, remember, Patton Oswalt wrote, this was before I knew who Patton Oswalt was.
Uh-huh.
He wrote that JLA Working Life or whatever that you loved. Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
There's a JLA one-shot that you read and you really liked.
Okay.
And you are not generally a fan of, like, the humor take on comics, but I remember...
You have to remind me what happened in it.
I don't remember. I have it. I've never read it. But
it sort of rings a bell, but...
I didn't know who Patton Oswalt was, but I just knew he was a comedian, and I was like, I don't really want to read this by some tourist comedian, and then you really liked it.
Huh.
I expect we'll get something like MODOK's 11, where there are some jokes, but it's not played for jokes.
Well, it's funny, Dave. You and I, at one point, when we were deciding we were going to try and do comics...
We did a pitch.
We had a pitch for Agents of AIM.
A workplace comedy, like pre-The Office and all that stuff, but it was a workplace comedy kind of like that amidst the high-tech villainy of AIM.
It was influenced by Office Space. MODOK was sort of the goofy boss who would turn and murder you. And we did have a... It was a comedic take, but it was also like he was dangerous.
Right. We wanted to have a little bit of some serious edge in there. So anyway, Patton Oswalt ripped us off.
Yeah. What I would say, Dave, is you and I are not philosophically opposed to something that has a little bit of fun with MODOK.
Correct.
As long as it just doesn't sell him out.
Yeah. Although, at this point, they've actually done so much comedy with him that I would be much more open to somebody who did a cool, serious version.
Yeah.
MODOK, the killing machine.
Yep. Actually, there should be an event series where MODOK kills the Marvel Universe. Maybe not quite that far. But, yeah, some kind of event where MODOK becomes dangerous again would be kind of cool.
Yeah. He actually kill Wolverine.
Yeah.
That'll show how tough he is.
Yes. Besides, Wolverine, you can kill Wolverine as many times as you like.
You can kill any mutant as many times as you like.
That's
they keep
true.
Coming back.
You should kill everyone on Krakoa.
Krakoa just grows new ones. That's going to be handy for future X-Men video games. You can have old school, like, just your next life.
And you come back as a different skin.
Yeah.
Krakoa was invented to sell video games. You heard it here first.
By comparison, in Jumanji, where they get three lives, is like, that's grim and gritty.
Yeah, Krakoa is like easy mode.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys can see Nick's face right now.
Meh.
All right. If I could just take up talking about comics this week, including X of Swords. Tell me about X or Ten of Swords.
It is called X-Men Ten of Swords.
X-Men Ten of Swords creation.
So this is the opening gambit. This is the alpha of the X-books.
They're going to bookend this series, which will otherwise just cross over between...
Oh, no. Hickman is not... He is not sufficed by having just bookends.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be a middle book as well.
Okay.
So there's a beginning, a middle, and...
But if I were explaining to somebody, the broadly, this works like a lot of miniseries, which is there's like a kickoff special,
yep.
Which is this one. It does say 1 of 22 on it.
Yep.
Then between of that will be random X books, like it'll be X Men, it'll be New Mutants, and it'll be
X-Hellions
and all that stuff. Then they'll hit the middle point, some more stuff, and an end cap.
Correct.
22 sounded like crazy long, but that's actually probably people don't need to read everything in it.
I bet you probably need to read every chapter.
It is.
I'm sure they would like you to. I bet you don't need to read everything in it.
Since it is like an ongoing, it's cutting through.
I'm
like
trying
all
not
of them.
To scare people.
But it is going to be weekly. I mean, this is going to be over pretty quick.
So you're going to have to spend a lot of money in a short period of time, people.
Okay, now you're the one scared. I want to talk about its awesomeness.
Here's the thing, though, Nick. You told me, I did not read this, I flipped through it, and I was like, oh my god, this art is so good, I wish I liked this book or had an interest in it. And when you told me about it, I actually became interested in it, because I like this premise.
Yeah, so basically this is a Lord of the Rings fantasy series that has been skinned with mutants and X-Men. This is a fight for the world.
In a fantasy world yet.
Well, I mean, it's Otherworld, which is essentially fantasy because it's
right.
King Arthur and...
But it's sci-fi fantasy. Like,
yeah.
They have floating fortresses and sci-fi powers.
But it's dealing with, like...
So this is Otherworld
Saturn, who's the queen of Otherworld.
So for just a real quick, simplify this. Otherworld is the place from Excalibur, or that is to say the Excalibur mutant book, which deals with magic stuff and is frequently or always set in Otherworld... it's in its weird way, that was kind of a little like the redheaded stepchild of all the X-Men relaunches, the kind of under the radar book, but now it's going to end up being the biggest, playing the biggest
role. It's written by Teenie Howard, which is, she is co-writing on this with Hickman,
makes
so
sense.
It sort of makes sense.
And Dave, I think Excalibur was one of the few number ones that you and I both actually liked.
Yeah, weirdly that was. And I know you don't want to say too much about like the story, but can we say that it has to do like sort of with Apocalypse?
Yeah,
and legacy stuff.
And that's what the big thing with Excalibur was. It was Apocalypse doing stuff with magic, and
right.
Something we hadn't really seen him do before.
Right. But he's kind of a big picture guy.
Yeah.
He's...
And then Ten of Swords is sort of a lot about his back history that we haven't known.
It seems like a challenge is being created between the regular world and Krakoa, maybe specifically,
yep.
With something on the other side.
Which is another half of Krakoa.
Can we say that?
Yeah, it's been said in the other books.
Okay.
So it is named Arako.
Is that like Krakoa backwards or something?
It might be.
I know it'd be a rock.
Okay.
A rocko.
Maybe an anagram or something like that. But
it's Hickman, so
without giving away too much, there's some ties to Apocalypse and his legacy stuff, right?
Yes.
And what is? Am I right? Did I understand right that there's a sort of challenge going on between them? That maybe these swords, which I thought was just kind of like the goofiest thing, like, you know, like what, people are just getting swords? Why would this even happen? It's because it's like a magical event,
yes.
Right?
There are 10 swords on either side, so there's a total of 20 swords, I guess.
Yep.
that people have to get a hold of. There's a light and a dark side, and then they will come together on a battlefield and fight.
Yep. Knowing Hickman, I know that there's, like, probably political machinations and scheming and all that stuff, because it's not just, like, a Mortal Kombat thing, even though that may, something like that may occur.
Yeah, there's definitely, and it's interesting with all the swords, it sounds kind of silly, but we're getting to visit, like, weird places in the Marvel Universe that I haven't seen in a while. Like, Cable has been dealing with Galador, and
the home of Space Knights, and Rom in the 1980s.
Yep.
And the sword, the Light of Galador. So we get that, and then Wolverine, of course, is the Masamora blade, and there's a bunch of other stuff, swords that I didn't recognize.
But they're from Marvel Comics history.
Yes.
That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, there's cool concepts. There's also tarot readings in here, which are done by Saturn, which is the queen of Otherworld, who plays a huge role in this. She is like the arbiter.
She the big bad?
No, she's not the big bad. She's like...
Oh, right. I know who the big bad is.
She's kind of the weird arbiter of this contest.
Okay, that makes sense. It'd be like as if... like she's kind of like Titania in the fairy realms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like clearly with like a next level power where it's almost more like Hela or somebody like that.
Yeah,
right?
But she definitely has her own sort of game and machinations as well. So there is kind of Game of Thrones style of back and forth throughout as well. Banshee shows up, which if you know me, that. you know as an ecstatic.
Although he seemed to be unconscious for large swaths, if not the entire thing.
But this is more Banshee than we've seen since the beginning of Powers of X.
You got Banshee flesh, and that's all you need.
Yes. And he gets to scream, and he said his screams can destroy mountains. And that's the kind of Banshee I want. I want powerful Banshee.
I actually don't like it when they overpower characters.
Yeah, me neither.
I feel like his scream should be able to damage mountains.
What if instead he was unconscious the whole time?
Scree!
What if instead a jet hit him?
Let me ask you this, Nick. Is there a central cast to this?
At the outset, there's sort of a team formed. It's definitely going to be changing. I mean, the Quiet Council, so
like,
presumably,
as it goes through other books, it'll deal with how other characters in those books deal with it.
But it's about the 10 people who pick up the swords.
Okay.
Ultimately.
Do we know who they're going to be?
I think you could guess on a couple of them. But
it's not like in the last page, 10 people are like,
no.
They're like, Wolverine, you must get the...
And I have a kind of feeling like this might be a little bit of like a G.I. Joe, one of the, like, they're going to seek the things.
Right, the old G.I. Joe miniseries that they launched with where the team would split up into teams to like go get the components to the Weather Dominator.
Yeah, I think if that's the kind of thing, then Hickman has found my niche and I'm like, yes, those are my favorite G.I. Joe episodes. But also, to talk about the art, Pepe Larraz, who did either Powers of 10 or House of X, I can't remember which one, he does an amazing job here. Everything is gorgeous, it's luscious.
Right, whether he's drawn, it seems like he can do the tarot card stuff with, like, really detailed, where they actually, like, kind of look like tarot cards.
Yeah.
As well as, like, these, like, fantasy vistas.
You were saying that you really liked Polaris's outfit.
Yeah, there's a great, like, kind of honestly opposed sort of page that the artist can sell at conventions for lots of money.
Yep.
But it's, Polaris, it's like an update on her costume. Still very close to the Neil Adams version from the 70s, but just a little bit rethought. And his art on that looked, I thought, particularly great. But, like, all of his stuff, like... when the council has their meetings and you kind of see the different emotions playing over their faces.
I love slouching Magneto. Like this is stupid. Why are we even talking about this? I think this has been a long time coming. There is a conversation between Warren and Apocalypse, which I think is really, really cool.
Right, since
when he took my wings out.
Yeah, like back in the late 80s, that was when he became his first modern Four Horsemen.
Yep. And I've been wondering when this confrontation was going to happen because I don't feel like Warren would love Apocalypse on this.
Right. And you might even say, oh yeah, you destroyed my life.
Yeah. So it's a really cool start to this crossover event. And it has actually a lot of surprising things I wasn't expecting.
Everything they built shall fall.
Yeah, but better. It'll fall better. Because that was an awful movie.
People have no idea what I'm talking about, X-Men Age of Apocalypse.
Oh, they
with
know.
With the trailer that endlessly... Well, when we had it looping in the store, Oscar Isaac shouting that burned itself into our brains.
Yep.
It was a great first issue. I really dug it. I'm excited to see what we get weekly.
I'm excited to question you weekly and ask what's going on in it.
I'm excited for you to have something you're excited about.
Yeah.
My thing that one of the things I read about this week that I liked was Immortal She-Hulk number one. This is Al Ewing.
And it is actually a one-shot, right?
It's a one-shot. It ties into his Immortal Hulk. It ties into She-Hulk status quo after Empire. Although you don't have to be reading either one of those. I do think if you're reading Immortal Hulk, you're definitely going to want to read this. It is definitely a tie-in to that current story. The art is by John Davis Hunt, who did The Wildstorm.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's really nice. Really nice art. I like the art a lot.
Yeah.
He's got that sort of, not Frank Quitely, but in that vein, I would say, maybe. It's actually a little more, I'm trying to place it, but... It's really nice art. It's
I remember it kind of had some of that like Russell Dauterman.
Those
guys who are kind of less about the sort of more about the kind of elaborate line work and less about heavy shadows and shading and stuff.
Yeah,
he kind of fits into that cool, slightly European style. It's cool looking.
It's a really good run through She-Hulk and tying her and her hulkiness into the redefinition of the Hulk that Al Ewing has done. It also, there's a Thor guest shot where there's a big spoiler for Thor if you're not caught up.
No.
So hopefully you are.
And there's a conversation with Wolverine, which
And there's a conversation with Wolverine, and they talk about death and resurrection and that kind of thing.
This just makes, I love this issue so much that I want Al Ewing to do a side book that is She-Hulk.
I would love to see more of this, yes. I think this is really good.
I think it was great.
Well, She-Hulk is probably going to be getting more attention as we get closer to the TV series,
yep.
So...
Yep.
There was also Marvel has a new Juggernaut number one this week.
Yep.
Yep.
That's Fabian Nicieza, 90s X-Men king.
That one is one
co-creator of Deadpool.
Co-creator of Deadpool.
But he's a guy who's like an old-school writer, and there aren't too many old-school writers currently helming X-Men books since the Hickman era.
Yeah.
Oh, Larry Hama's right? Doing that I Wolverine book.
That's right.
It's true. Is that a miniseries?
Yeah, it's a mini. And this is a
miniseries, too.
Right. They're like, the old-timers can write a miniseries, and then they have to go away.
It also has art by Ron Garney, and it's some of his best stuff.
It's really super good. It reminds me of, like, those kind of... I was telling you, Randy, John Paul Leone, but also, like, a little bit of Sean Phillips and some of those other artists who kind of do the noirish art, because it's very noir-looking.
He did Daredevil, I think, for a while with Charles Soule, and I think this is on par with that.
It's super good.
I will also say, the Juggernaut's a costume that I don't think you mess with in general. But his redesign, I like. The Crimson Brands of Sidorak are a little more represented. He's got the red eyes and the lines, and it's a good use of extra lines instead of a bad use.
I think he doesn't get too overly detailed.
Yeah.
And it keeps to the same basic things. You're gonna get the helmet with Juggernaut that just makes him look like just this beast.
Yep.
And you're gonna get the kind of the armbands and things like that. It is a weird design, but like it's more or less been in place since its creation in the 60s.
Yeah.
Also, the status quo here, where he's basically working for Damage Control as a damage control as a demolitionist.
Yeah, it's a
fun.
Cool idea.
It's a good idea.
Does it in fact like fit in specifically with the current X books?
No.
Anything mentioned of Krakoa, or could this have kind of like be read on its own?
This could have existed prior to the Krakoa stuff.
Okay, just curious.
Well, I think doesn't.
He showed up somewhere recently, though. Like, they had him show up out of an X-Book or something.
Well, he doesn't actually... I mean, he's not a mutant, so he's not really...
Yeah, it's true. It's more like he's... Well, like, his best buddy, Black Tom Cassidy, is a mutant,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is.
And so...
Black Tom is actually really important to the X-Books right now.
What is he doing?
He is, like, merged with Krakoa and is, like, an arbiter for, like, for its security systems.
Weird. How did he get merged with Krakoa? Is it because he does have a cane he carries around?
But I think his power is like biomechanical, like kinetic energy or something.
Sure.
So I think it kind of fit in with that. fit in with his power set.
Okay.
It's a little weird, but I kind of ran with it. But I think he says like something like, you know, mutants have a home now or something to this new character that Nicieza introduces.
Yeah.
And which does suggest a tie in with the current X-Men.
So, Boom has a new book written by Dan Panosian, who's an artist, art by Mariana Ignazi, called The Unkindness of Ravens.
For those who don't know, just like there's a Murder of Crows, a group of ravens is called an unkindness.
Is that true?
It really is.
Interesting. Okay.
That is not completely random.
So, basically, it's a girl and her dad moved to this town, it looks like, and her mom and sister died in a car crash, and they're starting over, and she has a run-in with all these sort of weird kids, and it looks like there may be some kind of weird secret witchy powers, and she might have, like, an inheritance of it.
Yeah, like, there's a girl who's gone missing at the school, and she sees a poster, and it looks weirdly like her and stuff. But yeah, this seems to be a something of a Chilling Adventures of Sabrina type of vibe to it. I thought the art was exceptional. I didn't actually get a chance to read it other than I kind of gave it a flip through. But I actually do think if there's Sabrina people out there, and I know there are, they should check this out. It's like at least it looked a little, I don't know if this is actually going to prove to be the case, like a little more punk version of Sabrina.
Yep.
We'll see.
Vault also has a horror book out, the Autumnal number one. It is about following the death of her estranged mother, Kat Somerville and her daughter, Sybil, flee a difficult life in Chicago for the quaint and possibly deadly town of Comfort Piach? Comfort Roch? I can't quite read it. New Hampshire. So I guess dead family and moving to a new town is the new horror thing.
I guess so.
It's written by someone who's he worked on Shape of Water, Troll Hunters, has really nice painty art, and is sort of a weird horror book. Comfort Notch is what it's called.
There might be sort of a kind of a low-key horror renaissance going on in comics right now between the Hill House books, and Chip Zdarsky just launched his. There's a lot of, and I know there's like a lot of other ones that are on the edge, the periphery of it. You know, things that are like supernatural, if not outright horror.
No,
I'm for it.
So yeah, I'm all about it. Seems appropriate as we head into October too.
There's also a Dark Knight's Metal Speed Metal one shot.
Yep.
Which I think is the anthology. Is it several stories? Or
I'm not sure on this one. I didn't get a chance to flip through it.
But it does seem like it specifically deals with DC speedsters.
Yep.
Although the metal music metaphor is a little silly, they clearly know it's silly, and death metal to deal with characters like the Batman Who Laughs and like other creepy dudes like that, and then speed metal for the Flashes and stuff like that.
Yep.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
I feel like are you going to get Ragman in there for thrash metal?
They should do a new metal that's actually the new 52.
God. No, the new metal one needs to be like their like cheesiest kind of characters.
Can they do a hair metal?
I mean, they should.
Maybe I don't want Nightwing in his mullet.
No. Then you take the bestial characters like Cheetah and stuff like that.
I like it, yeah.
Yeah. Timberwolf.
And Big Bear.
And Big Bear from the Forever People, yeah.
I mean, he just has big hair.
Big Bear, big hair.
He's not actually a hairy man. He just has big hair. Also this week, people have been anxiously awaiting the J.J. Abrams, Henry Abrams Spider-Man. Finally, issue 4 comes out. It has been what we call a Kevin Smith level delayed.
Yeah.
But the fourth issue is out this week, and I believe we have like two more to go. Oh, one more to go.
Okay.
This is the penultimate issue of Spider-Man.
All right.
I also want to mention, as always, Daredevil comes out. It's great. It's one of my favorite books right now. That's Zdarsky's Daredevil, and this was a really good issue.
You know what I would like to mention is that on the cover of all the Marvel comics is a neat, nice little banner tributing Chadwick Boseman.
Yep.
With a little rest in power tag and the little Black Panther symbol on the side of it. It's a cool, classy band, sort of like an armband kind of thing.
I like it.
But without the cheesiness of being an armband like when Superman died.
Yeah.
How much is that going for? it is a classy way to tribute him because it is like on all their books.
Yeah.
And so I dig that.
We also want to mention that the Blade Runner 2019 has a second volume trade this week.
Yeah, that's a serious
story.
We've liked and that feels like it really fits into the Blade Runner setting, and like in that second one takes you finally to like off-world colonies and places like that.
Yeah.
So definitely, like if you're gonna check it out, start with the first volume. It is one big story, but do check it out.
Yeah. Nick, anything else on your stack?
The only other book that I read was Venom 28, which is the third part of Donny Cates' crazy alt reality Venom story with
Is it third part? I thought it started with 25. Interesting. Okay. The reason I ask is we got reprints this week of 25 and 27, so we now have 25, 26 and 27 and 28 of Venom. And
well, it says Venom Beyond Part 3. So
okay, so that 25 was something else. And then we also
got... It could be like a prelude.
We also got reprints of Thor. So I don't know how long this will last, because there's only a couple of some of these issues. But we have all of Donny Cates' Thor and all of his current storyline of Venom in stock.
Yep. And if you're like a latecomer to those, consider picking up trade paperbacks. Yeah. He's got options.
Yeah, in fact, Nick and I put up a display in the Marvel section of Donny Cates' Marvel work. So we've got... like three rows of Guardians of the Galaxy, Venom, Absolute Carnage. I feel like there's something
Doctor
else.
Doctor Strange.
Thanos.
Yeah, I think even among the people a lot of people have been kind of coming in through Thor or Venom lately. Yeah. They should probably consider checking out his other stuff. Like, if you like this, you might well like this.
Yeah. Well, it's all tied together. I mean, it literally has ties.
The symbiote god Null shows up in like the Silver Surfer oversized special and lots of other stuff.
Yep.
And that's just a random example. There's characters that have been in all of these.
Yeah, so I think his Guardian stuff.
He's building up and he's quietly been building his own small empire.
Yep. Well, Thanos shows up in a bunch of other stuff.
He's going to annex the rest of the Marvel Universe and take over.
Right. all right, well, that's comics for the week. We actually talked pretty fast, so we're going to take a break and then come back, maybe talk about some horror movies and TV. Okay, so it is September, almost actually October. I think September has flown by.
Yeah. Have we even talked about September as a concept that only we celebrate?
We did.
I've talked about it on like other podcasts. I thought September was a thing now. Does not everybody not know what it is?
Yeah, I don't know.
The first week of the first podcast that we did in September, we talked about it because I ran down a list of horror movies that I watched.
That's what I thought.
I think, was I in that one?
You were not.
Okay, that's why I don't remember it.
That's why you don't remember it.
Yeah. I wanted you in here because you are my horror bro.
Yeah.
You're a horror bro.
Yes.
But, I think other than sort of percolating vaguely in the background of the pop culture, that there was a TV show, Gravity Falls, that show, where they, and it's the only episode I've seen is one that somebody showed me, because it had September in it. And the characters chose to celebrate it on there. I think they kind of, like, invented it. But I do think, like, as a portmanteau of September and October, it had been around before, but this show kind of ran with it. And I think that might have been sort of what put it on the pop cultural radar.
It's definitely spread, because I think all of my friends celebrate September.
Right. It's basically like an advance October, start watching scary movies, start getting spooky.
Yep. Of course, most of our friends are queer witches, so.
That's true. That's the place to be, right?
Yeah. So I got a Shudder 1 month.
Yep.
There's a code.
How did you get it? I got like a 1 week
Horror
generic
Hound.
One.
Horror Hound is the code. Maybe too late for you, though.
I'm sure once it's been done, it's done.
So,
unless you use a different email.
I was tipped to that, and it's a good 1 month code.
Yeah.
So I'm probably gonna keep it for another month, I guess. But so far I've only watched two movies on there.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I watched was Mayhem, which I think did we talk about it in this podcast, or did you guys talk about it?
I talked about it vaguely because you hadn't seen it, but you had wanted.
But now we've all seen it, right?
Mayhem.
Yes, I don't think
Dave has not seen it. All right, so I will talk vaguely about it.
By the way, just real quick though. Are you watching it through as an app through Prime?
No, I just got a Shudder app.
I'm watching it through Prime.
Because I don't know how to run it on my TV. It won't run through the PS4. Like, there's not a PS4 app for it. Yeah. They say they're working on it, I think. But I had to, like, watch it on my laptop, which sucked.
I know it's on the Roku.
Although, it was appropriate for the show, the one I watched, which we'll talk about later.
It's on the Roku for sure, and it's on Apple TV.
Okay, I guess I don't have either of those
things. Do you have a smart TV?
No.
Okay.
His TV's dumb.
I was going to say, if you have an Amazon app on your TV, then you could watch it through that. If you got it through Amazon. If you got it just through Shudder, you have to run it through their app.
Because you can do like an add-on on Amazon.
Like, there's not a Shudder app that I can. I seem to be able to download.
That's the issue.
Right. I got it. I mean, I could have before, but we just got it through Prime.
Right. I don't have Prime.
Okay.
Well, Dave has a laptop.
Yep. So anyway, let's start onto the what show.
Yeah, so I watched Mayhem, which is Samara Weaving and the guy who is in Walking Dead played Glenn. I don't remember the actor's name.
Yeah.
It's a fun concept.
Stephen Chow? No.
Stephen something. It is Stephen something.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun sort of mayhem comedy horror. Watched it, had a great time. I don't want to spoil it till Dave's watched it.
I
don't honestly know if Dave is going to like this.
Yeah, I don't think I probably will.
Because it's.
But tell me what, like, can you say what the basic hook is, or if it's like some other?
It opens with this, so I think this is not really a spoiler. But there is a virus that has gone around that sometimes causes people to lose all their inhibitions.
Okay,
and so that means that they basically get into big knockdown fights. They will be having sex with their crush in public.
Stephen Yeun.
They will yell at their boss.
This was the premise of the old Star Trek episode, The Naked Time.
Yeah. So basically, this virus is... And the CDC has got it locked down. Unlike in our world where the CDC is completely compromised, in this world they have, like, SWAT teams that come out. And
every air ventilation system, like... In every building has like a detecting
detect this virus.
Yeah, okay.
So it starts out with this guy who's in this office building. He is it a marketing guy? No, he's a like real estate something.
He's a lawyer.
Kind of scum.
The actor's name is Stephen Yeun.
Yeah. But he is in this building. He is one of these high powered firms. And he basically gets himself into some trouble, and as he's being escorted out, the virus puts everything into lockdown. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he's in this building with all these people that he's had years of workplace grudges with,
mm-hmm.
and he finds himself wanting to fight his way up to the top floor to express his displeasure to the bosses.
Okay, that sounds like a good premise as a gimmick.
It's fun. I liked it a lot. It's bloody.
If I were to just broadly compare it to something like Happy Death Day, like darker, funnier.
More top. It's in tone similar to Happy Death Day, but it is definitely a there's a bit of bloodbath thing going to it.
Okay,
yeah.
Honestly, what I compare it to is the other Samara Weaving movie I watched, was Guns Akimbo. It's not quite as gonzo as that. But it is pretty gonzo.
Okay.
I liked it.
It sounds like fun.
It's a step beyond Ready or Not.
Yeah. I had great fun with this. By the way, I did rewatch Ready or Not with my kid, and they loved it. And Ready or Not, I forgot how much I loved. And then my other one, on the other end, the Mayhem is like a fairly recent movie that's on Shudder. I went and watched Absentia, which is Mike Flanagan's maybe first movie?
I think so. Kind of like his indie movie. And just real quick, Mike Flanagan... Yep. Went on to do Oculus, made it big for sure when he did Haunting of Hill House for Netflix. Yep. So that's what most people are going to know him from.
Yep.
But he also did the Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
right.
Probably something else I'm forgetting.
And then Bly Manor is coming out in less than a month.
Yeah, follow-up to that. So, he's like definitely a notable new voice in horror.
And Dave, you've seen this one.
Which one?
Absentia?
Yeah, I have
and
seen
Nick,
that.
And Nick, have you seen Absentia?
I have not seen it.
So I won't say too much. It's a woman who... she is pregnant, and her husband's been missing for 7 years, so she is declaring him dead in absentia.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister, who has kind of had drug problems and maybe some issues, comes to live with her. And as she declares her husband dead, she starts seeing visions of him. As like a ghostly figure. I don't tell much more than that. But it goes interesting places. It is, as my friend Les described it, on a Kickstarter budget.
Yeah.
Like, it is very much student film quality. But I liked it. I thought the actresses were good. I thought the effects were scary, and I thought it was a fun movie. It will not make it my favorite rotation or anything, but I enjoyed it.
I think it showed the qualities that are Mike Flanagan qualities, which is a like high interest in sort of personal drama and characters that are maybe compromised, but that you kind of care about.
Yeah, for sure.
Interestingly, I think I might... I'm going to cast a dissenting vote, though, as to its cheapness, because I've watched it and I don't think I particularly noticed it. To me, it felt like a slick indie production that was just a small horror story.
Huh.
In tone, I thought it was a little bit like The Babadook, if not quite as emotionally draining.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it had some of those same qualities of, like... Okay, there's this scary thing, and but it's also kind of reflective of real world anxiety.
Yeah,
you know,
it seems to be what Flanagan connects with is
right.
our that
he's
sort
a little
of...
bit like Stephen King in that sense, in that I think he wants to like his His, and you know, he obviously, oh, he also did the other Stephen King thing, the what's the one, oh my gosh, the woman who's trapped, literally tied to the bed.
Oh, right. Oh, Gerald's Game.
He did Gerald's Game, too.
Oh, man, I need to watch that.
You should for sure watch Gerald's Game. I need to watch
Dr. Sleep, too.
It's super good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, he's clearly a King fan. He's adapted him twice
I
now.
I think he's supposed to be working with King on something else as well. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought, like, Absentia did have some problems for me. Like, I felt like the ending is a little dissatisfying.
Yeah.
But it's for sure one of those, like, worth checking out, especially if you've liked Flanagan's other stuff.
I'll have to, because I do like all of this stuff.
Yeah, I would give it a look. And it's pretty quick. It's not a long movie. Dave, you watched Host?
Yeah, Host, not to be confused with The Host, right. The Korean horror movie by the now super famous director of Parasite.
Talk about not long movie.
You guys Host both watched Host,
Host
right?
is like 50-something minutes.
Yeah, this is, you know, horror movies have a tradition of being a little bit shorter and kind of get in and get out. It's just like comedies. And sometimes you'll hit a horror movie that's an hour and a half or an hour 40. That's pretty common. Host is less than an hour, so you could be almost considered a short or something.
I just want to ask you a question, though. Did Host get you?
Yes.
It got me, too.
What do you mean?
Like actually scare you? Like, in a way that, like... few horrors, like, it got under my skin.
Yeah, like, it kind of did, too.
Is this going to scare me so bad I shouldn't watch it?
No.
It's not like it's, like, jump scares or anything. It's
there are
just,
jump scares in it, Nick.
There are, but they're not, like, cheap.
All jump scares are cheap. They can be good.
If somebody is walking into a scary place and then something jumps out and scares them, that's cheap. But, actually, the thing that makes it really cheap is when they do the, like, a false scare or, like, something like that just to set you up. And then,
but it's a damn cat.
It's a damn cat. They don't really do that in this.
No.
And the scares are interesting jump scares. But here's what kind of makes it sort of notable, and I think part of the reason why I got under our skin is that it is using the sort of modern format of literally, it's like a Zoom session.
Yep. Yeah.
So you are seeing what somebody would see on their thing, and that's why watching it on my laptop was particularly kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you've got like about 8 friends that are like, I guess they're all English. I think there's some Australian accents in there.
Yeah, I think they all are, I don't know. I thought there were, some of them are American straight up.
Are they?
Yeah.
But I mean, because it's Zoom, that would make sense. But many of them were some stripe of English, and they have decided to, in quarantine, this is super up-to-date quarantine stuff, to kind of see if they can have some fun one afternoon, maybe have a few drinks, and conduct a seance.
That's a terrible idea.
Well, no, that's because seances aren't real, and ghosts aren't real, and magic isn't real. so in that sense, it's a good idea.
If we're ever in a horror movie, Dave is the one who's going to get us all killed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. anyway.
But it's a neat concept for a horror film.
And it is more like the sort of the traditional, let's break out a Ouija board and have some spooky fun.
Yeah.
They're clearly approaching it like this, and even some of them are like, they're very believable as characters, by the way. Like,
yeah.
They just seem like real people. There's like, nobody is like trying to out-act anybody else. Nobody is like acting like a character in a movie. They act like real people.
Yep.
And some of them are like kind of nervous about this, because the same way you would be if you were doing just a Ouija board thing. So they're not stupid or anything. And the person, it's kind of funny early on. Well, like, there's a medium who, one of them is like, hey, I'm going to bring her into the session in a minute. Y'all got to be respectful. Quit clowning around because you're joking and stuff about this, but she's going to take this seriously and you're going to offend her. And so they're worried about this, and there's like, it feels real, but there's also kind of funny early on. I don't want to say what it is, but Nick, the thing about the, astral plane thing is super funny.
It is.
There's some very... what I've noticed in found footage movies, which this is roughly a variant on, is that they very often ease you in with some humor in them. Blair Witch did it, Paranormal Activity, like all of the most of the ones I know kind of do it in some to some degree, and this one does it very successfully.
I put this akin to like the Unfriended series,
right? It actually uses the same format, but arguably is better at it.
I do say, watch the Unfriended movies. They're good.
Yeah, I like the first one, and I haven't seen the second one, but it sounded interesting. Yeah, I think that other than a sort of cheesy ending to the first one, which a lot of... Honestly, I love found footage movies, or like the good ones, but several of them do, like, the goofy thing where something scary will, like, leap into the camera in the last scene, even though it makes no sense.
Right.
Like, they don't know you're watching or going to watch it one day, so it's so stupid. But anyway... Needless to say, I think we don't need to spoil anything about this. It's scary. The characters act, I think, pretty reasonably throughout it. Just every once in a while, somebody does something where you're like, "Don't do that." But I think it's things that
horror films,
and I also think it's stuff that someone might reasonably do.
Yeah. I was never taken out for the most part. Anything a character did.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to mention in it. But yes, it got under my skin. It made me jump several times. And
Kaylee,
I didn't quite know where it was going.
While we were watching it, Kaylee was like, are you like almost covering your eyes? I'm like, I was like, yeah, there was one or two times where I was like, I knew something was coming and I'm like, I could see it, but it happened in a way I wasn't expecting.
Oh, so. I want to call attention to the technical prowess of this. So apparently they like, all the people, like, this was really filmed through Zoom, just like you would expect. And everybody, like, I think kind of had to film their own stunts or anything that they had to do.
Yeah.
They had to film themselves. And I heard, I think my brother said there was an interesting behind the scenes about how they, like, if somebody needed to do something and they didn't know how to do it, they had to teach them how to do it. Like, And I kind of can't say what happened, what they had to, like, might have to do without
saying
it. But
that's interesting.
But, yeah, there was apparently, like, everybody kind of came, like, did their own stunts, for lack of a better word, and any special effects that they had to do, they had to do it.
Yep.
There was probably a little bit of post-production stuff.
Yeah.
It technically, like, it never breaks the interface. If somebody, like, people occasionally will, like, walk someplace with their phone or, like, their computer or something like that. But yeah, it uses all the actual Zoom stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going to be familiar to people in a way that's going to creep them out. Pretty ingenious.
I agree.
Nick, you watched Jurassic World, sort of.
Yes. Before I get to that, I'm going to tell a quick horror movie that I watched this weekend that I want people to avoid. And that is Antebellum.
Oh, really? So I've heard mixed things on this. I've heard people really liked it. I've heard people who didn't.
I really wanted to like this, but it comes across as a hollow Jordan Peele wannabe.
Is this from A24? Is that the studio that made Get Out?
Yeah, I think they're one of the people.
I'm not sure who. But I mean, it's
Did he produce it, though?
No. Okay, Jordan Peele isn't involved in this one. It's...
So like his movies, it takes on, like, it is clearly taking on racial subject matter, and through the lens of horror, and
it is kind of like some of the stuff in it is kind of vile. I mean,
yeah, I read a review that said that they, from someone who was saying that they were tired of sort of the black lives in movies only being used to tell these tragic, woeful stories. And they kind of juxtapose it with Lovecraft Country, which very notable does, not do that. Like, yes, there is that element that runs through it, set in Jim Crow South, or not South, but Jim Crow era. And so, of course, that's going to be a part of it. But every episode of Lovecraft Country will also show, like, parties, casual get-togethers, these characters having some fun, and living somewhat normal lives between the crazy stuff.
And there's a little bit of that in Antebellum, but for the most part, it's
kind of woeful.
Kind of, like, the harsh, like, the utter harshness of certain acts, and I was just really turned off by it. I love Janelle Monáe. She's great. She's the lead here. I just wanted more from it.
What was the movie she was most notably in?
I mean, she was in Harriet, which she was the lead in that.
What was the one about
she wasn't
the
lead.
She not?
No.
What was
Harriet
the one about
somebody else?
The scientists, the NASA scientist ladies.
Oh, Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. She was in there. Was. I don't think she was. I don't know if she was one of the leads or a major supporting role or what, but she was in it.
Hidden Figures was good. I like that one.
And of course she's a badass singer.
But and of course she's Green Lantern.
She should play Far Sector.
Far Sector Green Lantern is very much modeled on Janelle Monáe, and that'd be awesome if they did that.
Yep.
I
also dare say that some of the looks that Michael Burnham sported in Star Trek Discovery were inspired by her look.
Yep.
But anyway, I want to see this just to go ahead and see it, I think, and because I have heard some reviews that have liked it, I feel like I'm going to have to see it.
Yeah.
But I suspect I will probably end up where you are, Nick.
But, Nick, you would say you are anti-antebellum.
I am.
He's pro-bellum?
I would also...
He's pro-bellum.
I'm anti-spending $20 right now to stream it.
That's
wait
fair.
For it on right. HBO or yeah. Netflix or whatever.
Especially because there are tons of great movies just on Netflix and Prime and Shudder.
And which leads into, yes, Jurassic World, Camp Cretaceous, which yep. I'm not going to be, like, go into super depth, but... I just read an article that it is canon, so everything that takes place is actually part of the Jurassic World
movies. But this is kind of a more all-ages fare, right?
Yes, but not by... It is an animation, and yeah. that sort of makes it kind of...
CG, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's done by DreamWorks, so it's actually really good animation, yeah. really good cast. It's produced by
Colin... it's like a movie, but not a miniseries or something?
Yeah, it's, I think, a 10-part, 8-part or 10-part TV show.
Oh, it is a TV series.
Longer than Transformers.
And it's produced by Steven Spielberg, Colin Trevorrow, and I think one of the other producers of the
Colin
Jurassic
Trevorrow, Park. Who's been making... Who's
doing the...
Jurassic World movie.
Correct.
Or, like, the last two are going to be his.
And... It's about a group of kids who get to experience Jurassic World through a new thing called Camp Cretaceous, which is essentially like an overnight camp.
And I was led to understand that this was contemporaneous with the first movie or
something? Yeah, it is with Jurassic World. They're on the
back... Oh, Jurassic World, not Jurassic Park.
Correct. They're on the backside of the island, not near the main attractions.
Oh,
and stuff.
Okay. This would be like something that you might pay extra for, like a little side adventure, like if you go camping at Disney World.
Yeah, this is like Jurassic World just trying to branch out to bring more money
okay.
and stuff.
Okay, I like it.
And it's a group of kids that, like, one's like an influencer. She's got, like, several million people who watch her feed. So she's the only one who has a camera. And there's, like, a rich kid that... His dad got him in because he's rich, and there's one kid who's your main character named Darius, which I thought was it's great to have a person of color be your main character, and he gets
they did have a family of color in the previous Jurassic World short, right?
Yes,
which was a fun one. I really liked
it. Was.
It. You know what? It was kind of a not quite camping one, but it was set in like
a mobile home park
camping
kind of thing.
Plus dinosaurs.
Yep.
But the main character wins his sort of ticket to this Camp Cretaceous by beating a video game.
Yeah. That's the Last Starfighter style.
Yeah, it's a Last Starfighter kind of riff. And it also utilizes something from Jurassic Park 3, which I thought was really fun.
Whoa.
Which is That's the Sam Neill, William H. Macy, and Taya Leone movie, which people don't really care for. I actually think has got some really fun stuff in it.
Is that the one where they had the pterodactyls, or was that the second?
No, that's that one. That okay. The pterodactyls. Which is really cool. So yes, but then it sort of goes into craziness with Indominus Rex and all the stuff that right. happens in Jurassic World.
Is it basically do they experience? Does the chaos start when it would start in Jurassic World the movie?
Yes.
Okay. So they're like having a happy day camping or whatever, and then suddenly they're like, "That's not right." When they see a dinosaur running at them or something.
Well, there's some like hijinks.
That's what I do. That's not right.
Kids and teenagers do some stuff that you would expect teenagers to do, like let's screw around, and one of them like drops into like the Velociraptor pit. And stuff like
that. That is not what I would expect a kid to do unless he was
going
to die.
They didn't know it was the Velociraptor. They were going off by themselves and they hadn't really been told of what's around them. And they thought it was I call them compies, but they're Compothagosaurus. The
sure.
little tiny ones.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
They thought that was their pin and it ended up being the Velociraptors. So you get to see Blue.
You know, whenever you see those things about, like, kids around the world or where they go and they, like, you know, they carve their names into, like, the Colosseum or something like that, I'm like, these are probably the kids who would fall into the raptor pit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can't tell me in 2020 that there weren't kids who would fall right into the raptor pit. I believe that.
Yeah.
No problem.
But I think what I wanted to focus more and kind of for its good things is the characters. They're not one-dimensional. They actually go into little depth about each one of them. Some are there for good reasons. Some of them are being forced to be there for other reasons, which I thought was kind of... Some of it is adult
stuff.
You know,
the kids in the original, in the first Jurassic World were... like, what was it? Was it the young one who was excited and the older one who was like...
Just there. Just to be there.
Whatever.
I mean, Jurassic Park in general has always had an element of kids. So,
sure.
I mean, Lex and Tim and...
Yep.
Each one of them has that.
And Jeff Goldblum's little kung fu fighting gymnastics daughter who will kick the crap out of any raptor
yep.
with gymnastics.
She literally kicked a raptor in the face.
Did she use Gymkata?
Yeah, the stuff you're telling me, Nick, is making me want to see it. I actually have, like, weirdly, the Jurassic World series, I kind of didn't really, as a franchise, I don't care that much about Jurassic Park. But it does have some hooks in me, and the Jurassic World movies have somehow, like, they kind of embraced a little bit more outrageousness, I think, than the first ones did after a while. And so I've been kind of digging them.
I was expecting, like, a kiddie kind of silly show, mm-hmm. and it definitely is not that. It is a little bit more.
I wonder if my kid might like it. He likes the Jurassic World video game where you build a park. So.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, it's fun.
I heard it's actually, like, as I heard a number of people say, it's basically of the various Jurassic Park video games, many of which are forgettable, it's actually pretty good. It's like the good one.
It's a SimCity-esque. It's very good.
Yeah, very cool.
All right. Well, that will about wrap up our time this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.